Ars Electronica 2009 Human Nature Podcast.
Hello, my name is Julian Assange, as an Australian investigative journalist, and I am currently working in East Kenya. As a journalist for many years, I have seen the difference that disclosures make to how civilization is managed. I have also seen people, including my colleagues, be killed for the disclosures that they are attempting to bring to the world. And I have seen innumerable important bits of information be sat on in drawers and desks and waste paper baskets by the Fourth Estate for years and years and years because people felt that there was no legal or economic means for them to get that information out to the world. Now, my colleague has run away with my slides, but I think I can do okay. Firstly, is the volume all right? Yes? More? Okay. And out of the people here, how many people have heard of WikiLeaks before? More than just the name? Okay. And how many people here are journalists? Right. And how many people here are artists? Okay. So that's actually a nice mixture. I was terrified that I would be speaking to people that we disparagingly refer to in Australia as art wankers, because what we do is the exact opposite of doing nothing. We try and tackle the hardest cases in publishing in the world and succeed. Sometimes at risk, but mostly just by being intelligent. And although we don't have long, I'd like to show you some of those examples and hope that those illustrate to you that what we are doing is successful, that other people can follow what we do and do it themselves. And it forms part of a larger theory, which is that you can achieve reforms, significant reforms in civilization, by getting out the material which stimulates reform. You know, George Orwell wrote in 1984 that he who controls the present controls the past, and he who controls the past controls the future. What Orwell was referring to at that stage was the redaction of encyclopedias in the Soviet Union, the great encyclopedia of the Soviet Union when Beria became disfavored, Beria being the former head of the KGB, had his entry replaced with an extended version about the Bering Strait, that gap of water between Vladivostok and Alaska. What Orwell was worried about in the 1950s has now really come to pass en masse. Because with digital archives, once you control the digital archive, something in that archive, if it's removed, is removed forever. It's removed from everyone. And there's not encyclopedias across the world in libraries anymore. There's not newspapers that are being used across the world in libraries anymore. So censorship is now something that's very, very easy to do and is unseen. And it's unseen in Asian countries, and it's also unseen in the West. It's unseen in what we think of as democracies like the UK. So our focus, although it originally started out as primarily being concerned with these countries that we believed were the most corrupt and in the most need of reform and in the most need of exposure, has now turned into a global focus, including on the West. Because the West, through its own corruption, supports and extends corruption in developing countries, supports and extends injustices in developing countries, and in the new quasi-developed states like China. And I hope I have time to give you some examples of this. So first, let me distinguish between WikiLeaks and Sunshine Press. Sunshine Press is a network of journalists, activists, lawyers, and some individual donors who made money in the tech revolution. And WikiLeaks is the platform that we use to try and realize our ideal. Now, it's only embryonic. It's not a perfect platform. It has a long way to go. I think it is probably only one-tenth complete. But already it has some good victories. So this is what you'll see if you go to the front page of WikiLeaks. So we cover some 100 countries, and we have translations for more. Some are done by hand, some are automatic. And what we encourage the world press to do, and that includes now our bloggers and people on Twitter, individuals in their own communities, is to come and look to see what we're disclosing, and also if they have information to give it to us. Now, we get information electronically, and we get it via post, we get it in person. We have created complex security tools that help people upload material to us, including the most difficult material in the world. So we take top secret documents from the US military. We take and have published material related to from Guantanamo Bay to the secret internet censorship lists of China, a number of different versions. So we have never lost a source in the time that we've been doing that, just over 2 years. And we've also never had to take a document down. While there's certainly been many, many attempts, legal attempts and illegal attempts, to try and have us remove material. So far, we have been successful in resisting those attacks. And I wondered when we were awarded this award for community what they were talking about, because I thought, well, actually, we're just a network of very, very serious people. And not so many, but very serious in what we do. And then it occurred to me that, in fact, a network of people who are serious and committed about what they do is actually a community. And it's probably a good definition of a community. And I sometimes wonder whether community ends when funding begins. And it doesn't necessarily start with funding. And we have funding from people within our community, but we have no funding from people without outside our community. So this is what, for our online submissions, what people are presented with. We station our operations for online submissions via Sweden and Belgium in order to take advantage of press protection laws and whistleblower protection laws in those two countries. Sweden really must be applauded on this, in that it protects the right of people to communicate with the press anonymously. It doesn't protect journalists, it protects the right of everyone to communicate with journalists, and that's very different. Because I'm involved with the Swedish jurisdiction, if I was to tell you one of my sources after promising not to reveal one, I would be committing a criminal offence. And that's a very different angle on how the press should support civilised discourse than you see in other countries. In other countries, it's usually about the press as an industry has been able to lobby using its, in some cases, monopoly power to protect its employees, which are journalists, which do need protection. But it's an important distinction between the Western protection for sources and the Swedish protection for sources. So as a result of receiving material through this encrypted mechanism and legally protected mechanism, and the posting of documents to us in the mail and colleagues submitting us material in person, we have catalyzed 40,000 articles in the mainstream press. Nearly every one of those articles is on a subject that is to do with corruption, political malfeasance, and in some cases, political malfeasance can be a fine distinction. So we released Sarah Palin's emails in the run-up to the US election, which was a bit of lighthearted work for us compared to the other stuff we do. But actually, that was an important issue because Sarah Palin was using a Yahoo email account, in fact, more than one, to hide her governmental correspondence from the Freedom of the Information Act in Alaska. So even when something on the surface may seem like this is just a bit of fun journalism, deeper down there can be a more significant issue, which is the transparency of government. So I'll quickly go through some examples. The newest democracy that we have is East Timor, and to Australians, East Timor is an important country because it lies just to the north, and also to the Portuguese, who were once its colonial masters. East Timor broke away from Indonesia just after Indonesia itself became a democracy. Since that time, the governmental structure in East Timor has been rebuilt from the ground up. And so you see certain problems in this young government. And it's important to control these problems in a young government before they become cemented into the fabric of government. East Timor has been a country which per capita has given us more leaked documents than any other country. So it is remarkable that the East Timorese at this early stage are pushing so strongly for open government. So I just give you one example of that, and we have received thousands from East Timor. This is an intelligence agency map of SMS calls between people who conspired to shoot the president of East Timor. At that time, a famous rebel leader in East Timor was also gunned down and killed. And this is a sequence map of who called who in that conspiracy. So you see numbers in East Timor, numbers in Indonesia, and numbers in Australia. And you can see who initiated a call, who received a call, and who was next in the network. As a result, the official story in that assassination has been overturned. This is more on the same subject of that assassination attempt of for Ramos Horta, who's some of you may be familiar with as a Nobel Peace Prize winner. He received in his efforts to try and democratize East Timor. An example from Lebanon, which is the Rafik Hariri assassination. So an inquiry was set up into this assassination of the then Prime Minister of Lebanon. The allegation is that Syria or Hezbollah assassinated Rafik Hariri. And that may be true, but the tribunal that was set up to investigate that assassination was funded secretly only by states that were major supporters of Israel and enemies of Syria. So what does that mean for the outcome of that investigation? Does it have legitimacy or does it not have legitimacy? We can only tell by understanding where the money comes from and who's involved. And if deliberations have transparency and we're happy with the deliberations, then maybe we'll accept the verdict. But if tribunals try and hide their sources of funding, then at the very outset, we have to be suspicious about the conclusions. Our good friends here in Colombia, we have also received a lot of material from Colombia. So in particularly in relation to the FARC, some of you may have heard of the FARC as being the terrorist group of Colombia. And it is true the FARC has conducted a guerrilla war for many years in Colombia. And it has also kidnapped people to finance its operations, although usually not any rich person, but particular people. Last year, the spokesperson for the FARC was assassinated in a combined operation by the Colombian government and the CIA. At that time, he was stationed in Ecuador, and there was a significant diplomatic protest over the incursion into Ecuador to assassinate Raul Reyes, the spokesperson to the FARC. So we received Reyes' Yahoo email account with all his email up before the assassination and after, and several other documents relating to the FARC. And these tend to suggest that how he was assassinated, how he was located, was his use of a VSAT terminal in Ecuador. So a VSAT terminal is a satellite internet uplink. And when you configure the satellite internet uplink, you must put the GPS locations into the terminal. And so some of these documents, other than revealing what really happened in that case, are extraordinarily poignant. To read the emails of someone to their children in the week before that they were assassinated, in the days and hours before they were assassinated, and then read in the week after, why haven't you responded to my email? Not by his children, but by other people who hadn't yet heard. And so if you want to understand who Raul Reyes is, and to some degree who the FARC really are, these internal documents tell you. And what they provide is a mixed picture of some people doing things for some good ideas, but very corrupted by the situation that they have found themselves in Colombia. And we also have received contact from the right-wing paramilitaries in Colombia, the AUC, who are very rarely mentioned in the Western press. It seems to me this is an old Cold War hangover, but the AUC actually, according to official Colombian government statistics, kill and kidnap more people than the FARC and also engage in more drug smuggling. But for these traditional anti-Marxist views that the United States have, that's something that you rarely hear about. So journalists themselves are not free from engaging in conspiracies with intelligence agencies. So journalists at the German magazine Focus were helping track down intelligence sources of other journalists for the BND, Germany's intelligence agency. And a report by the Bundestag was commissioned into this behavior. And pages of that report were then redacted before it was released. And we received those pages and released them. We also received a number of documents from BND sources about Kosovo. And we released those, which revealed that the CIA had bungled a number of operations in Kosovo and had been conspiring with drug runners and the very, very corrupt Kosovar government. When we released that material, the head of the BND came to us thinking that we were an entirely German organization because we have a German domain name as well as our other domain names, and threatened to prosecute us in Germany. Eventually that was dropped, and it's a good thing that that prosecution was dropped, and I'm a bit puzzled to why it started. I think the reason that prosecution started is that the head of the BND wanted to show the CIA that they didn't leak the document. So in all these cases, there's complex layers as to why people do things, including attacks on us, which seem like they might backfire, but actually are in somehow, in a deeper analysis, a forced move by intelligence agencies or corporations or groups of lawyers that have attempted to sue us in different jurisdictions. Perhaps like to show you what a secret document looks like. In this case, we obtained Guantanamo Bay's main manuals. And these outline in exquisite and horrible detail everything that guards and intelligence officers are to do in Guantanamo Bay. That includes the management of prisoners, and in particular, it also included how prisoners should be hidden from the Red Cross, something the United States had completely denied and something that is a violation of the Geneva Convention. In response to releasing this document, the United States came out and stated that was in 2003, that was the second edition of this manual under Major Jeffrey Miller, and by 2004 everything had changed. As a result, another source came forward and gave us the 2004 manual, and by comparing these in exquisite detail, we were able to show that in fact conditions had gotten worse. There were still orders to hide people from the Red Cross, and a fake camp had been set up in Guantanamo Bay, Camp 4, which was to be a media show camp, and every guard employee employed in that camp had to have excellent public relations skills. This document and many others we have released on Guantanamo Bay have served, together with fine work by other people, to close that institution down. Although it's not closed yet, but it seems like the political writing is on the wall for Guantanamo. We've released a number of other documents related to Iraq and the prison conditions in Iraq. So an example from last year was from Fallujah and a secret report into prison conditions there. And as a result of releasing that report, all the prisons in Western Iraq were reformed. And the United States took over auditing and funding of those prisons. Something that is quite interesting that I see is that when a regular press story is written and it doesn't disclose anything about where the information came from, people get a false perception as to the bravery and the dissent in organizations. On a good day, the first third of the New York Times is all based on leaks. But you won't see it. You'll either see no reference or you'll just see documents seen by the New York Times. I think that is probably because the New York Times and papers like it don't want to be seen as dissident papers. They want to be seen as mainstream papers. But behind those stories, most of the time, is someone who is angered about a policy in their government. When we release documents that lead to stories, we present the full document so the public can make up its own mind and different journalists can take different angles on it, and even the organization where the document came from is fairly represented, because you see all the story. But also other people in that organization and people in other organizations see the internal dissent. And as a result of seeing courageous action by others, their spines are strengthened and they feel encouraged to step forward. And that's what happened with Guantanamo Bay. It's what's happened in East Timor. It's what's happened recently in Iceland, where we released Corpthing, the biggest bank in Iceland, its internal analysis into all its loans just before it collapsed. As a result of that, other sources have stepped forward because they saw that courage is contagious, that it spreads from one person to another. When you see that a just action is successful, there's an example to follow, and it's a good example and not a bad one. Unfortunately, although we have never lost an anonymous source, we have lost some sources who were not anonymous. An example of that is in Nairobi earlier this year, where two colleagues, Oscar Kingara and Paul Ulo, human rights lawyers working for the Oscar Foundation, who were investigating extrajudicial assassinations in Kenya, were themselves gunned down in broad daylight on their way to a meeting at the Human Rights Commission. Many of their documents, only some of which occurred before the assassination, others came out after, appear on WikiLeaks. Other people involved had to flee the country for several weeks and then came back. These are brave and courageous men, but they are not an example for others, not a good example. This is a tragic example. No one wants to follow in these men's footsteps. And while some people have to be public, what we really encourage is for other people to not be martyrs. But to give us material. Keep your job, sit down and relax, let us do the work. We'll protect you as best we can, and we've never lost anyone so far. We've protected people through technical processes, through legal processes, and most importantly, through public sanction against attack. And we never want to see, we don't want to see anyone else ending up like these two colleagues in Kenya. That, incidentally, you've all heard of probably all heard of Dick Cheney's assassination squad and the special forces that were involved in assassinating people for the CIA. But Kenya has its own version, and somewhere between 500 and 6,000 people were assassinated through orders approved of by President Kibaki. In Kenya. Now, of course, it's a complex situation. Some of the people being assassinated were criminals. Others were family members of criminals. But like the original sin that corrupts everything afterwards, a chain developed whereby it was not just those who genuinely were criminals who were being assassinated, it was the human rights lawyers who were investigating the crimes, it was journalists investigating the crimes, and political supporters of those who wanted to investigate the crimes. So I think I'm just about up to 20 minutes. What I have seen over the past 2 years that we have been leaking and disclosing documents to the public en masse is very different to what I saw as a journalist before. Now, I thought I was hard bitten and cynical and had seen a lot of the world. But what I discovered is that actually I was very ignorant. And what most people see is an illusion. Because what most people get is news that comes from press releases, or it's news that even comes from a human rights organization that is writing news in part to tell you something, but also in part to keep its funding. And that most information that comes to you is targeted at you. It is designed in some small way to manipulate you. So it is a deviation from the truth. But the internal documents of major corporations and intelligence agencies and governments are designed for their internal use, for some internal process that is occurring, some internal logistical structure. They're not designed to manipulate you. And because of that difference in perceived audience, you can start to see how major organizations work. And it's not how people think they work. It's something different. And if we are to produce a more civilized society, a more just society, it has to be based upon the truth, because judgments which are not based upon the truth can only lead to outcomes that are themselves false. So we hope that by adding a new source of documents that have never been seen before in such volume to the historical record, that activists and future politicians and communities will have a scaffold of what the real history of the world is, a scaffold to build on and hopefully build a world that is more just. And in the meantime, if that vision doesn't work, if for some reason that doesn't come to fruition, we know that every week we achieve major victories in bringing the unjust to account and helping the just.